Welcome to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast where we discuss tips, tricks, and current topics related to all things in the blind and partially sighted community. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce the founder of Blind Beginnings and your host, Sean Marcellet, and whatever co-host is on this week. Now, here's your host, Sean.
I'm Sean Marcellet, and you're listening to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast. And I'm super excited to have three co-hosts with me today. We have Randy, Keisha, and Nika. And Randy came up with this amazing topic that we're going to talk about. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Randy. Tell us what we're talking about today.
Hi, Sean. Hi, everyone. I dare to say I'm fairly excited about this topic. And may I note also, Sean, that coming through on the Zoom app here, you're looking all very professional podcaster with your headset.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I'm using my husband's PS4 headset, so he doesn't get to play video games while I'm doing this, but I sound way better, I feel like.
Well, anyways, so to the topic today that I thought of is what I'm going to sum up as blind representation in media. Now, what exactly does that mean? In this case, what I'm thinking about for today's discussion, as it will basically be a discussion, I'm including characters in, you know, generally well-known books, TV shows, movies, and books in this case also includes comic books. So for today, we're not going to be delving into, you know, representation in musical aspects or theater or anything like that. We're just going to be keeping to those four. And what made me think of it actually was I was watching a new season of a TV show called Call the Midwife, which is from BBC and follows the lives of several midwives in the 1950s and 60s post-war London. And in the newest season, we meet a new character, Marion Ermsby, who is played by Ellie Walwork. And she is a blind actress portraying a blind character.
Awesome. And
exactly. And it kind of shocked me a little bit as, you know, I kind of had a little like moment where I was like, wait, when was the last time I saw a blind actor or actress? Being visually impaired myself, I've grown up with my vision, and mostly it didn't affect day-to-day life besides reading. But, you know, there was definitely several moments where I, you know, recognized a character somewhere, but that I, you know, actually, I, you know, was actually recognizable as someone with a visual impairment or blindness, and not just, you know, a character who wears glasses but has, you know, it makes basically no mention of it anymore. You know, it's not pertinent to the plot. So and then I thought, you know, can I name any blind actors or actresses? Can anyone I know name any blind actors or actresses? The answer was yes, actually, which we'll get into, but it was very, very small minority who basically all came up with the same one actor.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've invited you three on to talk about it.
Yes, we're very excited.
Well, Keisha, you are involved in theater. Like, this must be something you've thought about.
Yes, it is. And that's why I was really excited to be able to talk with you guys on this podcast. And I think, Randy, thank you so much for bringing this up, because I have looked into this and I've seen this and I've thought about this quite a lot. And because as a visually impaired, you know, up and coming, still training and, you know, doing smaller, obviously much smaller stage productions, you look for people who you can look up to and who have blazed this trail before. And there's certainly not very many who have. Or at least if there are, there's not a ton of accounts that I can, you know, necessarily go and read about or like watch videos of or et cetera, et cetera. So definitely this is something that I've totally thought about. And then, you know, I've brought it up with my friends, particularly my other sighted theater friends. And I'm like, have you ever noticed this? And naturally not, it's not really something that they pay much attention to, but But yeah, like they're always like, yeah, you're always talking about visually impaired people in media. And I'm like, yes, it's something I'm very passionate about.
Yeah, I kind of have similar experience because, you know, I don't study theater professionally like you do, but I did a lot of like amateur theater shows when I was in high school and musical theater. And it's kind of something that I looked up because I wanted to see like, oh, are there any blind actors who are like Broadway stars or something, kind of in shows like Into the Woods or things that, you know, I was a part of. And there weren't really that many that I could find. So it was kind of interesting to see because I didn't really have kind of that role model or someone older to look up to.
Well, something I mentioned to the three of you before we sat down to record this is if you could think of any characters that you remember noticing growing up that were blind in, you know, a book or a show or a movie. As I'm wondering if you have any answers.
I definitely do, and I'm the oldest, so I'll go first.
For context for any new listeners, our co-hosts today are spanning a couple of generations.
Thanks for pointing that out. They're all in the same generation. I am the one who's a couple generations older. Anyways, no surprises there. So the first character that I remember, both in book and TV, was Mary from Little House on the Prairie. Mary was Laura Ingalls's older sister, and she lost her vision during the books, like sort of part of the way through the books. And actually, she's a great role model because she went on to work and she got married. And I think I can't remember if she had children, but you know, she sort of still went through the typical things that people do, regardless of the fact that she went blind. But that did definitely stand out for me. And I didn't know that I was legally blind until I was 12. And I can't remember at what point I read Little House on the Prairie. So I don't remember if when I kind of met her character, if I was relating to her because I knew that I was going to be blind myself, or if it was just that it stood out for me. So that was probably the first one, but I have a little bit of a list of others that I've come across over time as well, but I'll start with that.
Yeah. I think we're all probably going to have a bit of a list, some longer than others. Like you, I think Mary Ingalls is the first character in a book that I remember being blind, and she lost her vision from scarlet fever. And I remember one part of, I'm not sure which book in the series, but she's in the rocking chair. I think it's winter, so they're in the cabin. And she's sewing a rag rug, or braiding a rag rug and then sewing it into a circle. And I was just like, oh, that's cool, you know, because like I knew how to sew a little bit, you know, by hand. And you know, it's like, oh, well, yeah, you know. And so that's always kind of stayed with me anytime that my friends need help putting buttons or something back on or sewing up tears in their clothes. I'm often come to for, hey, can you fix this? And so I've in turn taught at least one other person who was totally blind to sew on her own buttons. And she said, you know, wow, you know, it's the first time someone's been able to explain it a way I could understand it. And I'm just like, yeah, I mean, why can't blind people sew?
Right. Mm-hmm. And maybe, I think there are a lot of people out there that would maybe make the assumption that you can't do that if you're blind. And it's kind of cool that a character in a book might have in some way, I mean, I'm sure, I know there's other factors that also made you believe that that's possible, but, but it's still cool that it was a positive representation of blindness, even way back in whatever year that was. You know, my memory of Mary was, she set a fire because she was trying to read and she was so close to the lantern that the book caught on fire because she was having such a hard time seeing. And that's when they really realized that there was something going on with her vision. I don't know why that stands out for me, but
strange, because I don't remember that at all.
It was in the TV show. I don't remember if it was in the movie. Yeah.
Okay, I mean, I've only really read the books. I've probably seen a couple of I do remember watching some version of a TV show at some point, but not well.
Right.
So anyways, moving on, maybe Nika next, if you have anything.
So I'm actually beginning to realize how very selective I am with my reading and TV shows, because I'm really, I don't know, I don't try new things a lot, but a book that really stood out to me is when I was little, probably around 11 or 12, I read a book series called The Adventures of Abby Diamond. Has anyone heard of
this?
No. Yeah, okay. And I remember reading those books, and because I was around the same age as Abby, you know, she was a blind like girl, and she was around my age, and she would kind of solve mysteries. And I remember I could relate so much, because that book was not stereotypical at all. A lot of the different references to assistive technology and stuff like that was really topical and really relevant to the age. And I remember kind of doing research, because I thought, oh, like the author actually like researched what it's like to be blind and did research into assistive technology. And it turns out that that book series was written by a vision teacher.
Oh, really? That's cool.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that series.
But it was really nice. And I found it to be really, really accurate for me personally. And I could really relate to Abby, because we had so much in common.
What about you, Keisha?
Okay. So, I'm going to go a bit of a stereotypical route here, or however you want to view it. And I'm going to bring up the inevitable, which is Daredevil.
Oh, that's on my list. Right. I'm watching Daredevil now, actually.
Okay. Now, when we say Daredevil in this case, do you mean the comics, the movie, or the series?
So in particular today, I want to talk about the TV series.
Okay. That's what I'm watching.
Yeah, so and because I haven't read the comic, because I haven't found any accessible versions, and I have never seen the movie, and I've heard it's not excellent, but you know, I'll try it. maybe one day I'll try it. But
yeah.
How I would like to start is by saying that in terms of Daredevil, at least one of you has heard this at some point, but they're like, you'll often have an interaction with somebody at some point in your life, or more than once in your life, where they'll be like, oh, you're visually impaired, or oh, you're blind. Does that mean your senses are more enhanced? Oh, like Daredevil.
Yes.
And I had that quite a number of times as a little kid, as I know many have and continue to have. And it made me hate Daredevil. I'm so sorry, Stan Lee and the other creators, but but I always was like, oh, Daredevil is so, this is so annoying. I hate this constant like bring back of this character that I don't even know about, but I already hate him because it's like, oh, I hate being associated with this character, and I don't have super senses. I'm not a superhero. I'm just a normal person. However, as a teenager or in my late teens, a friend of mine was like, you know, they knew my qualms with Daredevil, and they were like, you should still try Daredevil, because I think you would actually really enjoy it. Cause I'm a huge fan of superhero movies. And they're like, just try it. And if you hate it, you hate it. If you don't, you don't. So I actually tried the TV series on Netflix, and I actually really, really love it. I don't necessarily love all of the ways that Matt Murdock, who is the non-superhero name of Daredevil, is portrayed. Like, there's certain things that still irk me, but as an older person who's able to like pull my own feelings away from artistic representation, I enjoy it on a superhero level. I was doing some reading to also supplement my discussion with you guys today. And, you know, there's a couple ways, and I'm sure Randy, I'm sure we'll all be going into this a little bit, like, and we already are, but there's some certain common ways that these characters are, that visually impaired people are represented in these kind of media forms, which is like either the superhero, the helpless person, or like really inspirational.
Or the comic sidekick.
Yeah, or the comic sidekick, exactly. Like The Fault in Our Stars, Isaac.
Yeah. Also a character from the Robin Hood Men in Tights, Blinken. I've not seen this, but a friend of mine mentioned it to me when I was talking about my idea.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting. And like I've never, like, I read a couple of the Laura Ingalls books, like the Little House on the Prairie books when I was a little kid, but I didn't read, I guess, far enough to learn about Mary. So I didn't know about this. And I did, however, read the Abby Diamond books. And I love that Nika brought those up, because I remember being like a little kid, and that was like the one time that I can remember being like, oh, somebody who's kind of similar to me. And not like overly superhero, not overly helpless. Like, it was kind of a cool experience. Whereas with Daredevil, like, super cool movie, super cool series. but like, you know, I also can't, like, when people are always constantly like, oh, do you have enhanced senses? I'm like, no.
Like, the ability to hear someone's heartbeat four blocks away and identify the person? Yeah, not like, quite.
Okay. Yeah, that's a little bit fantastical.
And also, you know, okay, I do need to really get this off my chest, because this is always something I'm always complaining about in front of my friends. And they're like, oh my God, we had to hear about this again. But I think they're all in good humor. But it's the whole feeling the face archetype.
Oh, yes.
Oh, no.
Can I just tell you one quick tiny anecdote about that?
Yeah.
So I had some friends, well, they were just kind of acquaintances, some dudes I knew in high school, and they were like, it was joking, and I knew that, but they were always like, do you want to feel our faces to know what we look like? And I was always like, oh my gosh, please stop. And it was like, and it just, sometimes it happens, like, it'll just pop out of nowhere, like, I'm sure you guys have dealt with it.
Oh, too. Yeah.
Yeah, I get fingers a lot, but how many fingers am I holding up?
yeah exactly, and it's just so frustrating. But anyway, I'm gonna stop talking and let you guys go.
No, Keisha, tell us how you really feel.
Yeah. Don't ask me twice, Randy.
Yeah, I mean, that could be its own separate podcast episode.
Yeah, we've got lots to cover still, so I'm sure you'll get more time to let those feelings out.
Well, speaking of feeling faces, one of the other movies that I remember really well from when I was, I don't know, probably a teenager, is the movie Mask. And it came out in
the scary one?
No, it's it had Cher in the movie, and the main character was Rocky, and Rocky was a teenager, and he had a disease that made his face deformed. And the movie was about him and his mom, but he met a girl who was blind. And I just Googled it. So the girl's name was Diana, and the movie came out in 1985, and she was beautiful and she was blind. And the clip that I just came across was her asking him what he looked like. And because she didn't know, like, they had been hanging out and becoming friends, and she didn't know that he had this condition. And of course, she felt his face. Mm-hmm. But in that situation, it kind of had to happen, because he was so different than a typical face. Like, I feel like we need to talk about this a little bit, because there's this misconception that like, feeling a face is not really going to tell you it's going to tell you things like whether they have facial hair or acne or a really big protruding nose, perhaps, or, you know, like big things. It doesn't really tell you whether somebody's attractive or not. And it's so personal, right? Like, if you don't like facial hair, well, then if they have some, that's not attractive, right? So yeah, I think people often will want you to feel their face because they want you to know they're attractive. Or something. I don't know. I'm curious. I've never really put anybody on the spot and asked them, why do you
why?
Want
to? Yeah.
That's another episode. We should get a sighted person on
here. Yeah. No, or several.
Several, yeah, a couple.
The next five people who ask us to feel their faces, we invite them on.
On the street interviews with sighted people.
Yeah. But anyway, this movie was really cool. She rode horses. She taught him how to ride horses. And he taught her about color, because she had never seen color. And he did it in a really cool way. And that really stood out for me too. And I think for me, this is so cheesy, but it was like, aw, somebody can love you if you're blind. And somebody can love you if your face isn't perfect. And I don't know, like, you don't have to be perfect to be loved, was kind of the message that I got from that movie as a teenager.
And I think it's kind of nice to see those, like, kind of feel good movies.
Yeah.
I agree. And I can I say one more thing is that, like, not everybody is going to be, you know, some people, maybe they actually do want, like, if they have, like, you know, somebody who they're close to, not like a random stranger, because that's kind of hard for anyone. But like, if they're close to somebody who's like, hey, you know, do you want to feel my face? And they actually want to, I would say, like, never, don't feel ashamed if it's like that kind of situation. I just personally, like, find it really frustrating when, like, random people are like, yeah, you should feel my face.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. if you like feeling faces, go for, like, we're not, not dissing that. And I also think, you know, when you're intimate with somebody, you probably are going to touch their face at some, yeah, you know, like it, but it's just, it happens naturally, not like some weird, not with, yeah, every person you come into contact with. Like,
yeah. Like, I think mainly our qualms with that is kind of more you generalizing it to every blind person doing that.
Absolutely.
And with every person they meet.
Like, yeah.
That we need to know what people look like before we can carry on with the relationship. And we really, exactly. I mean, we might be curious, but this is totally a whole topic, but I guess it is really relevant because it's so represented in the media over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
There was another show that I watched. I think it maybe was in the 90s and it was called Becker. And it had Ted Danson. And there was a character named Jake who was a blind guy who ran the newsstand in the hospital where Becker worked, and Becker was a doctor. And so I don't know if he maybe counts as the comedic side character. Like, he definitely, it was very amusing and it was all jokes. Like, even the fact that it was a blind guy running a newsstand was kind of funny, right? He's selling print material that he can't read. So they played on that a lot. And I did find it amusing. And I mean, I think at the time I was just so happy to see a blind character of any kind,
yeah,
in a show that I didn't really care that it wasn't, you know, that it was, it wasn't, they weren't really poking fun at his blindness. It was just part of the shtick, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've heard of that show, but I've never actually seen it.
It was pretty funny. It didn't last a long time. Maybe I was the only one that thought it was funny. I don't know.
I want to see those ratings come in. So the next one I have is probably chronologically the first character I ever saw who was blind, because the movie is called Quest for Camelot and it came out in 1998. So I was about 4 years old. So if I saw it roughly when it came out, you know, I don't remember the first time I watched it, but he was probably the first character. So basically this movie, it's an animated movie from Warner Brothers, and it's an evil knight of the Round Table from King Arthur's time. It steals Excalibur, the magic sword, and tries to take over the kingdom, and this girl named Kaylee has to go save it, basically. You know, we're going to try to keep it a little bit spoiler free, but also, you know, we're talking and all these things have been out and available to everybody, so we're not going to worry too much about that. But on the way, she goes into the Forbidden Forest, which is a magical land where all of the trees and plants and everything is alive. And she ends up running into this man named Garrett. And he is a blind hermit who was actually blinded in a stable fire accident back in Camelot when he was younger. And now he lives there. And so this movie, this is interesting, actually. I just rewatched this movie yesterday, I think it was, in to kind of remind myself a few things before this, but also just because I really like the movie and I haven't seen it in a long time. And I found out a lot of things that I didn't know before. This movie actually stars a lot of big names, considering it's an animated movie from the late 90s. And I mean, I have any of you even heard of it?
No.
And so I don't know what niche I was in that I watched it, but Garrett, who is the blind character in this, he is played by Cary Elwes, but I don't know how to pronounce it, but you might know him better as Wesley from The Princess Bride.
No way.
Yes way.
Yeah, yeah.
It gets better. Or maybe it doesn't, if that might be the topper. Maybe I should save that for last. But we also have the evil knight Ruber, who's played by Gary Oldman. or Sirius Black from the Harry Potter movies.
Oh! That does top it.
King Arthur is played by Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, wow.
Who, if anyone listening doesn't know, is one of the James Bonds's.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Also Sam from Mamma Mia.
Yeah. And his singing voice is by Steve Perry. And then the main character, Kaylee, she's voiced by Jesslyn Gilzig, who's on Glee and Vikings and is from Canada, as it happens. Hmm. Anyways, so the mother of Kaylee is Juliana, and she's played by Jane Seymour, who was a Bond girl. And her singing voice is Celine Dion.
Oh.
Now that we mentioned Celine Dion here, did you know, and you probably didn't, because I didn't either, but the song, the Celine Dion, Andrea Bocelli song, The Prayer, was originally written for this movie soundtrack.
Huh. Who knew?
Oh. Okay.
None of us.
Now, because I remember the song, or I remember hearing it in the movie when I was a kid, and like it is a slightly different lyric version than the widely available album version, but it was the same one, and I didn't know until again my rewatching yesterday that she was actually voiced by Celine Dion, and the song was actually made for the movie. Yeah, so that kind of threw me, but I thought it was also interesting because, you know, there's a blind character in it, and Andrea Bocelli is also blind.
Right.
We're not going to delve into the musicians too much here, but since he was in the movie.
So he was a blind hermit. So I'm guessing not a huge role. He didn't get out much.
You would think, but so he's been, I guess, hermited away for, you know, 10 or so years from when the movie starts. We flash forward in time about 10 years. And so when Kaylee is trying to go save Excalibur from the forest, she ends up running into Garrett and being saved by him. And actually, I have a sound clip here that I recorded when I was watching it of Garrett's, basically his introduction with Kaylee. And I just thought it's pretty funny. I'm just going to pull it up here.
Wait, what's your name?
It's Garrett.
I'm Kaylee. Garrett. Why won't you look at me when I'm talking to you? Oh, I didn't realize you were...
What? Tall? Rugged? Handsome?
Blind?
You know, I always forget that one.
So I think that's an interesting reaction that they actually animated into the film. The,
very interesting. You know,
the, oh my God, I'm so sorry you're blind first reaction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then... I really enjoy his reaction. One, that he comes back at it with a joke, and two, that he lists off other attributes of himself before the blindness.
That's cool. I love that.
Yeah, that is cool.
I highly recommend you all watch this.
I will.
Yeah, now I'm intrigued.
Is it Disney?
No, it's Warner Brothers. So Warner Brothers. You kind of have to, you can rent it on YouTube. You might be able to rent it on Amazon Prime or something like that.
Okay. And
we have any international listeners in the future, you could probably find on some of the other, you know, American available streaming services.
Because as you were talking about it, I was trying to think if there's ever been a blind character in a Disney movie.
I don't think so.
Isn't In the Woods considered Disney?
Yes, I think so.
Because the prince technically loses his vision for like a few minutes and then gets it back.
So that's an interesting point, though, that I wanted to touch on, because there are quite a lot of shows where they have instances of, you know, the what I'll call the temporary blindness or the blind episode,
right?
You know, where a character loses their vision for some reason, usually to advance the plot for some reason. And, you know, sometimes it's just like one episode, like in Family Guy season 4, where he goes blind from, I can't remember exactly why, but, and then he ends up getting a surgery to reverse it, and everything's fine by the end of the episode. So it's not really relevant to the, you know, grand scheme of the show, you know? And so what you just mentioned with the Into the Woods character, that, you know, I would kind of call that, I don't know, what would we call that?
like a little cameo blindness.
Yeah, blindness cameo, like it.
Yeah, like I remember watching a show too when I was 7. It was a fairy show, and the girl like lost her vision because the evil wizard took it. But after unlocking her magical fairy powers, she fixed it. And I remember thinking, like, oh, that makes me kind of sad. Like, I thought now the character was like more relatable, and they took that away.
Hmm.
A fairly well-known example of that might be Game of Thrones for most people out there. Season 6, one of the main characters, Arya Stark, is stricken blind for most of the season, and basically she learns to fight with her other senses to outmatch this other assassin who's constantly sparring with her and testing her and beating her up.
Interesting.
There's also the very kind of negative portrayal. I'm thinking of Scent of a Woman. Have any of you seen that?
Oh,
Al Pacino, not- and he's blind and he wants to kill himself. And the whole movie is this young guy trying to stop him from doing that, basically. And yeah, it's just not an awesome portrayal of blindness.
Yeah, there's several instances like that where it's either oh woe is me, or where a character is incredibly dependent upon their sighted partner for while they're blind, and then okay, well now my sight's restored, or some other event happens, and then everything devolves into fights and jealousies or something like that. And it's just like, we're not, We don't need a sighted person to get by with our daily lives.
I just thought of, I don't know if this counts as Disney now that Disney owns Star Wars.
No, but Disney owns the world.
Nicholas, my son told me this or just at dinner, we were talking about this because I was going to be recording this podcast. And he said, but Mom, there is a blind character in Star Wars. Nobody knows this character's name. And he's watching, I don't know if it's, is it in Rogue One? No, he hasn't seen that yet. He's watching Clone Wars and Rebels, like the animated series. Hmm. And I don't know if it's in Clone Wars or the Rebels one. Hmm. But anyway, there is a character. We had to ask Google the name and I've already forgotten it. But I guess he's a cool character.
Okay, can I also speak to that? Because in Rogue One, there's also a character, like this very cameo guy. I also don't know his name, but I'm sure he has a cool name, but he basically, all that he basically goes around, he's like, I'm one with the force is one with me, or something like that. And he just does that, like he's saying that over and over and over, and like he's basically walking around like a blind guy, like using the force to navigate and stuff.
Yes, like, oh, okay, I think that's the same character, because my son thinks I have some version of the force because I can walk around.
That's kind of awesome. Yeah.
I know, right? And I told him I do, because it's cool to have the force.
You're a Jedi, Sean.
Damn right I am.
The Yoda of our group.
Oh, I love Yoda. Okay.
Curious to know, has anyone ever read the book All the Light We Cannot See?
Yes.
I've heard of it, but I haven't read it.
Yeah, it takes place during the war.
And it was interesting because I was also at an earlier time, obviously, when disability rights and even women's rights weren't as developed as they were now. So even reading that book, I was kind of getting frustrated, but that's also something else I had to keep in mind, which was that it was kind of not of this time, and it was from over 50 years ago.
Yeah, I don't think it's not a true story, is it?
No.
Yeah, okay. I didn't think so. Her father makes these miniature sculptures of all of her neighborhood, and she sort of learns her way around by looking at the sculptures, and she's able to get out. And I don't really remember. It was an interesting book, but yeah, I know what you mean, Nika, because it was kind of like, yeah, it's just a different time.
She does get work, like she works eventually and she goes to university eventually, but during her childhood she never went to school.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, I'm like, so you just stay at home all day. And, you know, the thing is, she's a really intelligent character. Like, that's the thing. Like, she's really, really smart.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on. Just before we entirely leave the topic and forget that we talked about Quest for Camelot, just one more name in there in that list of cast. There's a comedy animal sidekick named Bladebeak, who's played by Jaleel White, who may be known as Steve Urkel.
Oh, wow.
I know, it's just full of surprises. But anyways, we'll move back. We'll move on from that. I still recommend the movie very much. So the next one I want to talk about is probably the next one on my timeline of growing up that I saw that is in fact a Disney movie, and it's called Going to the Mat.
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it. Nika, Keisha, have you heard of Going to the Mat?
I've never. Not.
No. Wow. I don't know. Maybe I should have picked John for this episode.
Is it like a wrestling movie? It sounds wrestly.
It is in fact a wrestling movie. Now, this movie actually has two blind characters, both played by sighted actors, which is a theme of most media until we get up to more recent topics that we'll get into in a bit. But in this one, we have a character named Jace Newfield. He is moved from his old school to this new school, and he's the new kid, and he's blind, and his new school doesn't have a basketball team where he used to play basketball in his old school. And the only accommodations they made was they put some kind of device on the backboards of the baskets to, you know, be able to locate by sound and no chest passes, I think, was the other one. You know, so I like this movie because it shows kind of like how, you know, what we might term regular sports can be sometimes really easily adapted, like really easily. So, you know, he's kind of a jerk at the beginning of the movie because he's, you know, all angry about moving and can't play basketball and all these things. And he, you know, meets this new kid, this other kid, and I can't remember his name, but he's kind of the goofy sidekick friend. And he ends up, I think, mentioning, like, why don't you go out for the wrestling team? So this character does, and again, the only accommodations made for that is, I'm not familiar with wrestling. I assume not many of you are familiar with wrestling, but I guess when you start in a normal wrestling match, you are not in physical contact with the opponent, and to accommodate for the blind wrestling, you start with your hands on each other's shoulders or something like that. So again, really simple adaptation.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, and he ends up being really good, and, you know, they probably win the championships or whatever. I can't remember exactly the end of the movie, but the other blind character is the music teacher, and Jace, the main character, doesn't know he's blind, and he's also a drummer, so he's, you know, kind of showing off in the middle of class at some point, and, you know, all angry and angsty teenager, and and after class, or maybe it was after school, and he was playing in the room again. And the teacher comes in and, you know, basically kind of gives him kind of like a little, you know, wake up talk, you know, why are you being a jerk? You know, it's like, you know, life's all against you. And then at some point he's like, you know, kind of, well, what do you know? And he's like, well, I'm blind too. You know, I am heavily paraphrasing this again.
Yeah.
Recommend checking that movie out. And it is available on Disney Plus.
Sounds
great. I totally need to see that. That's awesome. I've even written it down. But when the heck does that ever happen in your real life? That you're the blind kid at the school and it just so happens that one of your teachers is a blind
teacher?
Like, really? When has that ever happened?
About anyone.
I wish. That would be so cool.
Also, I wish that sports were made that easily accessible.
Yeah, that too. Like, this school sounds amazing. They hire blind teachers. They adapt the sports.
Yeah, and I'm like, what? My school wouldn't even let me do a swim team.
Man. That's a whole other topic as well, where we face a lot of barriers in, you know, either can we compete in sighted sports? Are we allowed to compete in Paralympic blind sports? You know, anyways, that might be a future topic.
Yeah, but it's nice that they portrayed that in a movie, in the media.
Yeah, that's cool.
Very cool. Thanks for sharing all these different examples that
like we haven't even heard of too, Randy.
Which I'm kind of surprised by, because, you know, to some degree, the newer ones, or rather like the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s ones, I'm kind of not surprised if, let's say, Sean hasn't heard of them, because they're kind of in between the, you know, I'm a kid or teenager watching stuff and I have kids watching right. stuff, you mm-hmm. know, so it might not have ever appeared on the radar, but I'm kind of surprised that Nika and Keisha haven't heard
well, like I watch well. Mostly kind of popular like things, like the stereotypical like Grey's Anatomy kind of
I stuff mean like this that. Was on Disney Channel. It's a DCOM, a Disney Channel original movie. It was on the Disney Channel all the time when we were kids. But
I don't know, I never watched Disney, like I never ever watched really Disney until I got Disney Plus a couple months ago.
And now you're
know, it's something that my parents, like my parents read me Disney stories, but they never really played me Disney movies.
Whereas I think most of us have at least several Disney VHSs somewhere.
Yes.
I got rid of mine, but because my VCR broke and you couldn't really buy another VCR, I didn't think. So
I very have sad one. Day. Yeah,
oh, I dinosaur.
As part of a graduation president, or not president, sorry, graduation present. So that was only, that was in the 2010s for reference. They are available.
Oh, good to know. Good to
yeah,
know.
But I've actually specifically told my mom, you're not allowed to throw away our collection. I want it. But I've also had other people tell me that the tape is going to degrade over time just sitting there and it might not ever be usable in the future. But oh well. If anything else, I want the covers, the cases they come in.
Yeah, understandable.
What else you got on your list? Now you've really sparked my interest.
So the next one, which hopefully I think all of you should have heard of, is called Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Yes.
Yes. I think I remember something like that.
I've been meaning to watch it.
I was being sarcastic.
Is that different than the Avatar, the movie?
This is not the blue alien people.
Oh, okay. That's the one. Okay.
So this Sean and anyone else not familiar with this series is an animated cartoon. I say it like that because it's debated on the internet whether it's a cartoon or an anime, and I will not go into that here, but it is animated. It's a three season show that took over 3 years, and I actually remember at the time waiting for book three to come out, the third season to come out in between seasons. So that started 2005 2000 to 2008, and this is a show that it's set in a fictional world loosely based on a lot of Asian cultures, and there are four main nations, and they basically each are part of, you know, kind of represented by one of the four elements. There's the Fire Nation, the Earth Kingdom, the Water Tribes, and the Air Nomads. Now, some of these people, not everyone in every nation, but there are some people in each country that have the power to manipulate the associate elements. So you have waterbenders, firebenders, earthbenders, and airbenders. And so, you know, earthbenders can pull up rocks and make caves and holes and stuff and, you know, etc. I'm not going to list them all. And there was this one person called the Avatar who was the only person who could master all four of them. And at the time that the world needed him most, he vanished. And then we come to where the story begins, the series, 100 years later. And we meet our main characters. And basically, we go through the first season and we get into the second season where we meet this character who is an earthbender. And she's actually pretty much the best earthbender in the kingdom. And her name is Toph. And she is, I think, 10 years old and totally blind.
Cool.
Yes. And she is a very, very strong character. And I think this was one of the first times I was like, that girl. And the fact that she's a blind girl, too, is just so darn cool.
Yeah.
I want to use stronger language than that.
I love cool, like, representation of, like, really good degrees, like, really excellent.
Yes. Mm-hmm. She's a strong, outspoken, you know, commanding personality, you know, and the fact that she's a female character, a blind character, and this kind of amazing, outgoing person, you know, where the entire
premise of it is her parents are very sheltering, and oh no, my daughter is blind and helpless. That's a direct quote from one part of the episode. And you know, whereas she's very much not helpless at all. And she proves it, you know, time and time and time again. And by the end of the season, or the end of the series, there's no way they would have succeeded if she had not joined the crew.
I'm very interested, like, in the let us play us movement, which is like the like let blind people play blind roles. Like, I'm also I'm also a big proponent personally, and I know some people disagree, but you know, acting is acting. You know, people are acting different things that they aren't actually in real life all the time. So I totally am a proponent, like, you know, if people who are sighted can play disabled roles, of course disabled people can learn to play able-bodied roles. So but on the same token, with all of these disabled characters, it's like I really believe that it should, like, there should be more people who are actually disabled playing these roles.
There's not a lot of people who are disabled who are acting already, so I think it would be like Randy was saying at the beginning, talking about Call the Midwife, like that character and how like deep, like how well she was played, and she was played by a blind actress or a visually impaired actress. And I just think that it would be great to see at least more disabled roles portrayed by disabled actors, and also just to give them, just to give more disabled actors more like credentials as well would be good. But yeah,
I totally agree. I think that, and also perhaps the role would be more accurate,
or at least blind people like being consulted more about the characters, like the way that the sighted people are portraying the roles. Like, it would be like more consultation.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, I think it should absolutely be part of a director's job to actually do research into the specific types of people they're portraying. And obviously not just to ask, you know, one blind person, because everyone's experiences are different. And I think it's important for them to ask a diverse group of people so they can get various answers.
Like, as a theater actress, if I'm going to go and play, this is just a random example, but say I'm going to go and play like an LGBT role or something like that, and I'm not I'm straight, but like if I go and play somebody that leads a different lifestyle or is from a different background than me, like chances are I'm gonna go talk with them more in depth, talk with somebody from that kind of lifestyle, just to kind of actually get like some legitimate knowledge, or like some
it's so important though, so important,
I'm not like out there throwing stereotypes around like crazy, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You all bring up very good points. I'm glad you did. Because that brings us nicely to a pattern I noticed in my not incredibly in-depth research of characters, TV shows and stuff. But of the things I did look up, there's a big pattern basically of the further back, you know, 80s, 90s, even early 2000s, well, actually all of the 2000s, that you go, and when the movie came out, the more likely you are to be played by a sighted person playing a blind role. And also, the further back you go, you know, the more likely you are to have a blind character being like, it's a comedic role. You know, the point is that it's basically an ongoing joke, you know. And as we move forward closer to now, you're starting to get more, you know, still very small number, but you're starting to get more, you know, I guess, positive character roles, and then also actually making more effort in, like Keisha was saying, you know, some research, or Nika was also saying some research, and you know, consulting people is a good point. That brings us to a couple of shows more recently, including Daredevil that Keisha mentioned before, but we also have one called In the Dark, which is from 2019. And the main character is blind, and basically she's trying to solve her friend's murder. And she is played by a side actress, but there is another character in there that's been in, I think, well, 18 out of the 26 episodes, so she's in a lot of them, who is, I think she's a girl from Toronto, or at least Ontario, and her name's Callie Walton, of Peterborough, Ontario. She was only 19 years old, 19 or 20 now, I guess, and she was losing her vision and enrolled in like the only school for the blind in Canada in Ontario. And then there was a casting call basically through the school, and she landed the role of this other blind character in the show. And cool. Yeah, and so that was really cool as well, that a coworker of mine, when I was talking about this, she was like, oh, check this show out, you know. And basically, like, this girl Callie, she had, her goal growing up had been to be an actress of some variety, and then when she lost her vision, she basically was like, well, I can't do this now, you know, had to give up on her dreams. And then, you know, through that opportunity was like, wait, no, I don't, this is excellent, you know.
Yeah.
It'll be an actress. Like I mentioned before, The Call of the Midwife, which the new season was only in 2020, so that's very current. And then that brings us to the other fact that also that a lot of these shows are, you know, getting blind consultants, mm-hmm. or blindness consultants, who are usually visually impaired or partially sighted to some degree, and or another one of them also used like a blind writer. So they are, you know, as we come forward to modern times, we are seeing more effort put into the research and the, you know, someone on set going, no, I wouldn't do it like that. And if I'm blind, you know, I don't think an actor should do it like that.
Exciting. Yeah. And I did hear, when, cause I was asking that friend, that particular friend that said, you should watch Daredevil. And I was asking them, like, my first question was, is the main actor who plays Matt Murdock, Daredevil, is he actually blind? And my friend was like, no. And I was like, and then he's like, no. He's like, calm down. He did follow and like observe visually impaired people, and he did consult. And while his portrayal in some ways isn't completely accurate, one of the things that I do enjoy about the show, besides the fact that it's like an amazing action superhero thing, is that he, you know, there are some things, and I was like, because I watched a lot of it with this particular person, and I was like, I kept asking like little questions, like, what kind of cane, like, what is his cane like? Like,
yeah, I'm curious about
that. I was like, whenever he goes and fights, what does he do with his cane?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh,
hear the heartbeat in that.
You know? Like, you just threw it down the alleyway and like, bye, see you later, Kane. I was like, because he also is a lawyer by day. And I was like, ooh, how does he read? Like, does he have assistive tech? Like,
I want to know those things.
And the show doesn't ever show them.
It doesn't describe that stuff.
Like, sometimes it will, but like, also, I just got to say this one thing that did, so mostly I am saying like, good job on Daredevil. Yeah, of course it's a little bit fantastical, like Randy said, because of, you know, superhuman senses. So, but
I mean, it's a superhero movie. Yeah,
of course. Like, it's fantastic. Yeah, it's like, right. Yeah, Captain America. No one exists like that who's sighted either. So, but unless you're, wow, like amazing. But but
call us.
So like mostly I say like it's a great show. But there are, you know, there are still the parts that I'm like, like, that's a little iffy. And also, like,
I read in an article while I was doing this little bit of like refresher research, was like, for the long, like, when it was first released on Netflix, it didn't have descriptive audio.
Oh.
And I was like, ooh. And then there was a petition by a bunch of like visually impaired people that was like, hey, well, this is like a visually impaired superhero, why do we not have descriptive audio? And then, you know, after some, you know, actually doing some advocacy, there was some descriptive audio that was made available. And fortunately now, pretty much everything that's Marvel is all described on Netflix and along with a number of other things, as we know, thankfully.
Yes.
But I was just like kind of blown away. I was like, what? Why not?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's been other cases of that too. Movies about guide dogs, but it's not, wasn't described or something. I don't know. I feel like there's been that situation before. And like, of course people are going to want to watch it who are blind if it's got a blind character, because it's so rare that we have a movie with, especially a main character that's blind.
Yeah.
So, but I do have to say the audio description. Well, I mean, I guess just the show itself, Daredevil, is very violent and graphic. Holy, like, wow. That's all I got to say.
That's all superheroes for you.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm cringing. And usually when that's one of the benefits of not being able to see is when you don't see the graphic stuff that everyone else is covering their eyes and you're kind of like, what's the big deal? This show, yeah, it brings it to life for you, whether you can see it or not. So we have to talk about This Is Us. Come on, man. I feel like it's like...
That's my next one. Yeah.
Yeah. Super exciting. So I have loved This Is Us since it came out. And then at the beginning of the last season, we met a blind character. And I just don't want to spoil a lot of things, but...
Yeah, because I've actually never heard of This Is Us before.
Oh, you would love it. It's such a good show. And I mean, so there's a baby that's blind... I'll say that. And so it's kind of like showing the parents and how they're coping. And it's so true to life for like my job and working for Blind Beginnings. And it's just been so awesome. And it's so far portrayed really positively. And yeah, I just love it. So and the character who plays this blind person is
the actor.
The actor who plays this blind character is actually blind himself, which is
I read an article about that a couple months ago when it started becoming like a big thing. I was like, oh yay.
Yes.
And that is fantastic. I think I have not actually seen any of the show, so I can't provide any detail, but this was the person who was mentioned repeatedly to me when I asked around that this is a person, an actor who is actually blind that I can actually name.
Yeah.
You know, by a bunch of sighted people, even, which is even more impressive, you know, like, you know, as a blind person, you're more likely to know about, you know, semi-famous blind people than the general public is. And that the fact that I had, I mean, several blind people, but then also several sighted people tell me, you know, this show and this guy, and I believe the character's name is Jack Damon. And the actor's name is Blake Stadnick, and I believe he has syndrome.
Okay. Awesome. Blake.
Perfect. Yeah.
Blake Stadnick.
There we go.
Yes.
But yeah, it's an awesome show. Highly recommend it. And the way they're portraying blindness is awesome. It's super positive, which not like, you know, it's real. Right. It's not like superhero positive, but it's not like depressing and it's
helpless.
Yeah, definitely not. That's
exciting. I want to watch it now. You guys,
is it on Netflix?
I've been watching it in real time on actual old-fashioned TV. I think it is on Netflix now, perhaps. I'm not sure.
Old-fashioned TV, what's that?
you still have channels?
You push buttons to change the channels?
As we're coming up again in recent times, and, you know, along the trend of actually using blind or visually impaired actors to portray those types of characters, we come to an Apple TV series that was fairly recently filmed and aired on the Apple TV app, and it's called C, and it stars Jason Momoa. I think several of you might have heard of it.
I've watched it and definitely heard of it, yes. Were you not in it, Randy?
I, in fact, was, along with a few other of our Blind Beginnings members.
You were in it?
We were, actually.
You meet Jason Momoa?
Funny how that's the important question here.
I'm sorry. I am also a girl, so.
Well, anyways, okay, we're just going to give a brief premise of it because it's pretty interesting. It's supposed to be set in a post-apocalyptic future where a virus, interestingly coincident, has wiped out most of humanity's population, leaving about 2 million people left on the planet, and everyone's blind because of the virus was the side effect. And basically how over, you know, the centuries, it's things have changed, how would society, you know, function, but also like succeed, and like, how would you set up your villages? How would you find and deal with food? And I like the idea and what they did with it. I have mixed feelings on the, you know, show itself, because I would think of it almost as an alternative possible future as opposed to currently realistic future. But the main point of this, besides the fact that the premise of the show is that the vast majority are blind, because in the first couple of episodes, we meet the only two-sighted characters in the world who were born, and then, you know, events happen. And that's kind of the beginning of the show. And, you know, usually it's, you have a couple of blind people as a minority in the larger population of sighted people. This time it's the reverse. And I thought that was really interesting that, you know, a bunch of sighted directors, writers, showrunners thought of that collectively.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then additionally that they, you know, again, the main, you know, big names, main cast are all predominantly sighted still, you know. So that's still a little bit of a bummer, but they put in a good deal of effort to actually cast you know, visually impaired, partially sighted, blind people as a lot of the extras, and they had actually the same blind consultant as on Daredevil. It was Joe Strecki, I think, or something like that. And, you know, what Sean mentioned is that, yeah, there was they put out casting calls. I think some of them came through the Blind Gains email lists.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us replied, and I ended up getting a part. And in the final cut, you can see me for about half of a second in the corner. If you know exactly when to stop. But I got my own room in a trailer.
That's cool.
You know, it was pretty cool. A couple of other ones, you know, other people we know actually include a lot of people on the Vancouver Blind hockey team, the Vancouver Eclipse. You know, several people from Blind Beginnings and the wider blind community in the Lower Mainland, as most of it was filmed in the Lower Mainland and Vancouver Island. And they did a great job about, well, as far as I could tell, they did a great job on, you know, making everything accessible for people. You know, when they were like, okay, we need you to come down here for this costume fitting or what have you. You know, and I'm like, I can't really get to the Delta airport at that time of the morning by transit. And they're like, we'll pick you up.
Nice.
One of the lines I saw, I was reading an interview done with the blindness consultant. And basically he was saying, like, you know, there was like one question, one simple question that seemed to make a huge difference for people. That was, would you like the script? You know, they emailed the script, first of all, to all the, you know, visually impaired actors, and you know, but then they also were like, would you like that in Word, Microsoft Word, or PDF?
Yeah, that was really nice, because I auditioned for it and they actually specifically asked like what format was like better.
That is nice.
Which to most people might sound nonsensical and like, why does that matter?
Well, that's it. And like, I've auditioned for a lot of different like things, and it's always like, oh yeah, they just send you through with the script. It's often like a scanned, inaccessible sort of PDF thing, which usually I then have to be like, okay, that, you know, like that doesn't work for me. I need this. And but it's like it's amazing how like it's simple to ask, and it's usually fairly simple to convert. And it's such a turn point question for us. Like, it's such an important thing. And that's so brilliant that they're asking that.
And for anyone who might be listening that doesn't know why that's important, it's predominantly down to accessibility software and devices being able to read the formatting.
Totally.
If I'm right. Yes. That's
which might be a whole other topic.
Yeah, we'll have to go into that.
But yeah, so I think overall they did a, you know, pretty good job. I want to say a great job, but I wasn't shooting every day and all the time or anything like that. So I don't know really the grand scheme of things. And sorry, back to your question earlier, Keisha, I did not meet Jason Momoa, but I do think he walked by me. So this was funny, because the day that I was on set with a couple of our other Blind Beginnings members, they were actually in the stunt team because they were going to be wrestling. So they had to sit out in a tent with a somewhat functioning heater and coats, and I just got to take a nap in my trailer.
That's awesome.
It was pretty funny actually. And then, but they basically sat there for hours, just like, and there was crew bringing around food and going, do you want some shepherd's pie, do you want some borscht, do you want, and like meanwhile I was on out in the middle of the field, you know, walking back and forth repeatedly with a group of people, you know, doing multiple takes of stuff.
Oh my gosh, shepherd's pie and borscht, yes please.
It was pretty funny. I think there was gyozas at one point too.
Wow, wait, I need to get into this biz,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, but anyways, there was, I think there was three tents set up in a line along the field, and they were in the second tent and the third tent. And I remember hearing one of the crew kind of being like, no, the first one's Jason's tent.
Oh.
So I was like, oh, maybe he will be here today. Yoo-hoo. But he wasn't in like the script. So I was like, he's not going to be like, you know, filming anything. But then I was in line with some people for like set up in a line for the shot, not just standing in line. And I see this guy walk by with baseball hat. I think he was wearing a red plaid shirt and had reasonably long brown hair tied back in a ponytail and kind of a beard.
Yeah, boy.
Now, I, again, reminding people, I don't have the best vision. So, and on top of that, I'm also not great at recognizing people out of context when I'm not expecting it. But one of the other extras kind of in front of me kind of went like, you know, fist bumped him or something like that. And I was like, I think that was Jason Momoa. So he was within about 10 feet of me.
Well, you're practically best friends now then. That's cool. Awesome.
So I think that's a great place to wrap it up.
Thank you for bringing us this super interesting topic. I feel like this is probably our longest episode yet, but it's been really great. And I think I'm really curious to see some of these shows that you've talked about in movies that I've never seen before. And let's go check out all those blind characters. And I guess I invite our listeners to do the same. Pay attention.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How often are you seeing characters that are blind, and are they actually blind in real life? And
bonus point.
How are they portraying blindness? So thank you so much to the three of you for being with us today. I'm Sean Marcellet, and you've been listening to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast. Join us next time.
For more information on Blind Beginnings and its mission to inspire and support children and youth who are blind or partially sighted and their families, visit www.blindbeginnings.ca.